Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive.
That allowed a bum like you to become president.
Bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that.
No.
Somebody else made that happen.
The government cheese did it.
The internet didn't get invented on its own.
No.
Government research. The government. Al Gore.
Al Gore got it. Al Gore invented the internet. And that's in the government cheese. Between the government cheese and Al Gore's internet, what more do you need? We are living in strange times indeed. We have a president who is a naked Marxist who, as he cracks up on the road from his lie tour, his tour of lies, deceit, the real Obama starts to come out. The hidden Obama starts to be shown. The Obama that I've told you about for 3.5 years now is seen on a daily basis. Trickle up poverty, trickle down tyranny, naked Marxist. You didn't build your business. Somebody built the business for you. Now, let me tell you something. I'm 70 years old. I've been working since I'm 5 years old. Nobody built my life for me. I built my life. Now, it is true that I've had good teachers here and there. About 1 out of 10 were good. Maybe 1 out of 10 were good. Maybe along the way, 1 out of 1,000 people are decent in my life. But if it wasn't for my work ethic and my desire to succeed and my God-given brain and the fact of the matter that I refuse to quit, I wouldn't have anything. I'd have nothing. In fact, the opposite is true, Mr. Obama. If I had let the government have its way, I would have been destroyed at age 50 when they fired me because I was a white male. You heard me, Mr. Obama. If it was up to the government, I'd be lying on the roadside naked, my eyes being pecked out by vultures because of affirmative action. But I wouldn't let you and your minions destroy me, Mr. Obama. So you see, the opposite is true. Unfortunately, you, of course, had a silver spoon handed to you. Your hardworking mother, and grandfather did everything for you. So far as we know, you never bagged groceries, did you? Did Obama ever bag groceries in Honolulu? Did he bag anything in Indonesia when he was a boy? Did he bag any halal food? Did they put him in a halal grocery there as a child? See, I went to work at 5, Mr. Obama, and I didn't get any government cheese, and no one gave me a job. I'm wondering, though, did he ever have a job? Did Obama ever shovel a driveway for a quarter? Did Obama ever deliver a newspaper? Did Obama ever work as a busboy in the Catskill Mountains? Did Obama ever work? Did he ever do anything? So naturally he thinks that everything is done by somebody else, because for him it's true. Everything was done by somebody else. That's how he became president. So when he says that you didn't do it on your own, he's reflecting his own view of the world, because he didn't do it on his own. Without Al Gore's internet, where would he be today? Without Al Gore, who invented the internet, how in the world could Obama have raised all of that money? You see what I'm saying? And without the government cheese, how could he have gotten where he is? So I ask you, ladies and gentlemen of the Savage Nation, do you finally agree with me that he's showing the world that he is a communist? Because only communists think this way. Now, by the way, he's not the only leader in the world who thinks this way. Castro, Fidel Castro, has thought this way since he was born. Chavez thinks this way. The communist Chinese think this way. The ex-Soviet Union thought this way. And now, of course, your Democrat Party thinks this way. So I will ask you, business owners who listen to the Savage Nation, did the government build your business? Did the government make you what you are? Is it the government that keeps you in business? Is it the government that protects your business? You and I both know what the truth is. You and I both know that the government harasses you at every turn. City, state, and local government makes your life as a business person almost impossible, certainly unprofitable. But why don't you call the show? Now, it is true that most of the people listening to the show are working people or business people. I would think that those who are illegal aliens don't listen to the show. Those on welfare don't listen to the show. Those natural-born leeches that Obama seems to be appealing to don't listen to the show. But if you do listen to the show, do you think that Obama is right when he says that you didn't build that business on your own? Tell your story. This is your opportunity. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now play the other clip, clip two, Beowulf. Let's hear the other one.
You know, there are a lot of wealthy, successful Americans who agree with me.
Hold it, of course. Yeah, the ones who stole money from government contracts or get inside information. Sure, they agree with you. You give them $1 billion, they give you back $10 million. Sure, they agree with you. But listen to how he goes on now.
You know, there are a lot of wealthy, successful Americans who agree with me.
Warren Buffett.
Because they want to give something back. They know they
didn't.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own.
You're a liar. You're a liar. I resent what you're saying. The government tried to destroy me at every step of the way. No, stop him. This is my show, not his. We have the most lying, deceitful man in the history of the presidency standing up there saying that if I'm successful, I didn't get there on my own. A normal man would have broken 50 times from the pressure I'm under. Don't you tell that lie over and over again. I'm successful because of my own drive and my own abilities, Mr. Obama. You had nothing to do with it. In fact, you and your ilk try to stop me every step of the way. Now, if you're listening to the Savage Nation, I want you to call the show and tell the audience if the government built your business for you, or if the opposite is true. Tell them what Jerry Brown does to your government every day of the week in California. Tell them what the city that you live in does to your business every day of the week. Tell them about the fraudulent low-life inspectors who come into your restaurant and try to break your restaurant because of a grease this, something there, a grease thing there. They try to kill you with the permits. If you're a contractor or if you're a homeowner who wants to add a fence to your house, tell them about the rat bureaucrats and how much money you have to spend to get permits to build a fence so they can run off with pensions that have broken every city in this country. The opposite is true. There's a war going on out there, and Obama's on the wrong side of history. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own.
Okay, there it is. This is the core of Obama the communist. If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. I have been telling you for 3.5 years he's a naked Marxist. This is communism. This is how communists think. This is how losers think, frankly. They hate the boss. They hate the owner. They assume they're as smart as you, but frankly, most of them, when the whistle blows at 5 o'clock, they just want to lay back. They don't want the worries that you have. They don't know anything about finance. They don't want to bother raising the money, taking the chances that you took. The essence of capitalism is to have an idea or to have a dream and work towards it. Borrow money if you have to, as I did. Work for next to nothing, as I did for years, to get where you are. Even in radio, I had to work for next to nothing in the beginning. The fact of the matter is, you invest in yourself and you believe in yourself, but no one did it for you. I believe Obama is reflecting the true Obama. He hates successful people. He hates the American way. He resents anyone who is successful. He still thinks he is a poor man. He still thinks he's an outsider. This is a very pathological statement, by the way. If you want me to get into the psychology of it, I believe that the pathology expressed by Obama, where he says if you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. Somebody else made that happen. He's trying to say to you that he's jealous of you, because he knows in his heart of hearts that he didn't get where he is on his own. He knows that he's a Manchurian candidate of sorts who was planted here by forces beyond our comprehension. And so he thinks everybody who's gotten anything has gotten there through someone else. Nothing could be further than the truth. And that's why I've invited you to call the Savage Nation. And this goes for virtually any field of endeavor, whether you're a ball player, talk show host. I don't care what you are. If you don't have the brains and the drive, you're not going to get where you are. No one put you there. Let's look at the Navy, the U.S. Navy. Look what this man is doing to the Navy with the crazy girls from Harvard. Take a look at what he's doing. Take a look at what this crazy man in the White House is doing to the military. Take a look at what the crazy man is doing, eliminating urinals on ships. The crazy man will next tell you that although it takes great skill to land an F-18 Hornet on a bobbing aircraft carrier in the middle of the sea, he's going to make certain that people, all people who want to fly those planes will fly them, and all of them will land them on the carrier deck. Now, you know, that's physically impossible. Either you have the brains and the skill and the knowledge to learn how to fly a plane like that, and you land it on the deck, right? Or you don't. Well, not according to Obama. Not according to Obama. If you're a highly skilled naval aviator, you didn't get there on your own. Somebody made you a naval aviator. It wasn't your guts and your brain and your patriotism that got you there as a naval aviator, or you're a sniper. You didn't get there on your own. He put you there, the government. It's some fat government bureaucrat from Poughkeepsie, New York, who gave you the ability to land that jet on the carrier. Do you follow the drift? Now, I don't understand how anybody who works for a living can't finally understand that I am a sage. I've told you from trickle-up poverty to trickle-down tyranny, I've proven it. He's a communist. This rhetoric is that of communism. This is the rhetoric of Karl Marx. This is the rhetoric of someone who hates capitalism. This is the rhetoric of an anti-American. This is the rhetoric of an America hater. This is what dumb Mitt Romney should be talking about. This is what the dummy should be talking about. Well, he's really a nice man. And I think that nice man really ought to stop some of his staffers from saying those mean things about me and Ann. That's the end of the road here. I mean, either we get someone with guts running against him, or we're crushed, we're finished, it's over. It's time for someone to take Romney and stand him up and say, hey, dummy, you're the only chance we have. We put you in here in order to overturn this dictatorship. You know, get your act together. But no. He's still calling this communist, this America hater, this guy surrounded by 1,000 criminals. He's still calling him a nice man. There's a story up right now. I'm going to show you what's going to happen. Different story. U.S. Navy ship kills one after firing a boat off Dubai, right? U.S. Navy ship opens fire on a small boat racing toward it in the Gulf city of Dubai. They kill one of them aboard the boat. They fire a 50 caliber machine gun at it to protect the ship. So what's happening now? There's an investigation. Imagine a warship fired a gun. My God, I will bet you that the boat that was coming to the warship was simply some Arabs trying to trade baskets or to deliver some sardines as a gesture of friendship. After all, we didn't remember the Cole. Why should we remember what happened with the USS Cole? That shows a warlike mentality. My suspicion is that it's some Christian heterosexual Tea Party member who fired that machine gun, and I think he should be purged out of the military. I think that if we had a big fat feminist manning that machine gun, and the machine gun was turned towards the Navy ship itself instead of away from it, to make certain that the Navy personnel all went as instructed into the diversity training room, I don't think incidents like this would happen too often. I think if we had more and more big sisses aboard ships with machine guns not aimed outward but aimed inward, making certain that the Navy personnel conform to the new edict of the Obama administration, these sorrowful incidents would not occur again. We have no reason to believe that those Arabs approaching the warship at speed in a fast boat had any harm intended. As I say, they're probably bringing pita bread from their village, from the native crafts, because they love America so much. Or perhaps they were bringing a basket of fresh sardines or some other low-gluten item for the Navy personnel because they care so much for us. And I think this trigger-happy Christian heterosexual who fired the machine gun ought to be, well, if not imprisoned, he should certainly be investigated, interrogated. And I would guarantee you that if Obama gets behind this investigation of that Navy guy who shot that machine gun, they will find for sure a connection to a Tea Party. There's no question about it. This is the kind of thing you get in the Navy when you have heterosexual Christian men who believe in the Tea Party. They fire guns. They fire guns at people who they think are coming to hurt them. That's not what the warships are for. A warship is not meant for war. It's a birthing clinic with propellers. It's a diversity training mechanism. It's a method of bringing people up who would normally be trapped in the lowest strata of society. That's what the Navy is for. In fact, I think that if they really would let Obama get control of the Navy, they would probably remove the engines and propellers and just leave them moored to the docks where they could be used as birthing clinics and things of that nature. That's what they're built for, not built for war. When was a warship ever built for war? And that's why I say Obama really should look into this Navy ship killing one after firing at a boat off Dubai. He can certainly get that as correct as he gets the idea that somebody built your business for you. You get it? How do you feel about Obama saying that you didn't build it on your own, someone did it for you? Oh, you don't know what I'm talking about. New York, WOR, Joe, let's go. I don't know who to take. I got so many callers right now. Who's the best caller? Absolute best. What? All right, Jamie, line 8 from KSTE Sacramento. Go ahead, please.
I'm proud of doing the business all my own with the 2-year-old at home. It was difficult, but it has paid off in the long run, and we didn't have to get loans. We did it with the money that we saved up.
But wait, now, you're not saying you did that on your own, are you? Obama would say someone did it for you.
Yeah, well, those
did you get it? Did you build your business while eating government cheese and getting government? Didn't a bureaucrat from Sacramento come and show you how to start your business?
No.
You mean Jerry Brown didn't send one of the geniuses that he hires from one of the flop schools in the state to show you how to start a business? I can't believe that.
Nope.
No, they study business at the colleges in California in between the acts of pornography and sex. They must know how to start businesses. They come out, they want to run a business. They want to own a business. They want to tell you how to run your business. They want to permit you out of business, so they must know business. I mean, if Obama knows how to permit you out of business, he must know all about business. That's what I say. And so you have to take Mr. Obama seriously. Phone number is 1-800-449-8255. You comment on any of these topics if you wish. How do you feel about Obama saying somebody else made your business for you? You didn't do it on your own.
Savage.
So President Obama has exhibited himself as the naked Marxist I've been warning you about. Here's a man. You know, Alibaba and the 40 Thieves was a fable that I read as a youth. We don't have Alibaba and the 40 Thieves right now. We have Alibaba and the 400 Thieves running this country, who think that anyone who's successful in this country owes it to the bureaucracy that in fact stands in the way of our success at every turn. Finally, someone's responding to Alibaba. Business leaders hit back at Alibaba after he says the wealthy aren't responsible for their own success. Finally, business leaders have broken out of their shackles. They've broken free of the shackles put on them by Obama and Alibaba. And Obama said, if you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. So finally, they're fighting back. Picture today speaking at a town hall rally in Cincinnati. He's been blasted by business leaders who say he has a lack of understanding of American entrepreneurs. Of course he does. To a Marxist, the bourgeoisie is a dirty word. That means middle class. To a Marxist, an entrepreneur is an evil person who needs to be arrested after his assets are stolen. Obama said in a speech in Virginia on Saturday that small business owners could not claim credit for their own success. He said governments, not individuals, create jobs. He knows nothing about business because he's never run one. He knows nothing about creating a product or a service that anyone actually needs, because he has never created a product or a service that anybody needed. Obama is a front man for very powerful forces who put him where he is. Now, I'll give him credit. He's a very hardworking front man. He's working as hard as any candidate I've ever seen. In fact, he's shriveling away. I don't understand that part of it. I'm actually worried for the president's health. He looks skinnier than any healthy man should look like, to be honest with you. Something's wrong with the picture. But the fact of the matter is, there is no question in my mind that I'm not indebted to the government. The government has tried to destroy me every step of the way. There's not one thing the government ever did that gave me success. Not one thing. I had to get around everything the government created in order to get where I am, personally. I'll say that unequivocally. The government did nothing for me. It stood in my way. In fact, when my turn came to take the job I worked for, they said white males need not apply. We are the government. You will have to put your life on hold. We need to give it to unqualified minorities, unqualified women, unqualified illegal aliens. That's right, sir. You're a white male. Too bad you're an immigrant son. Too bad the times have changed. Step aside. Let the really superior people take over. Yeah. So, no, the opposite is true. But we're fighting for the survival of our country. We're fighting for the survival of the American way. We're fighting for the survival of literally our self-respect. Because if we let this guy get away with this naked Marxism, we're going to wind up with a society very much like that in Havana, Cuba, where there's nothing but broken cars from the 1950s, and people sit around collecting a welfare check and play backgammon in back alleys because they've got no opportunity. Houses that were once beautiful have fallen into disrepair in Cuba because nobody will invest in painting the house, in repairing the plumbing, and repair, calling an electrical contractor, because A, they don't have the capital to do it. B, they can't borrow the capital. C, nobody would buy the house because you're not allowed to buy the house at a profit. That's the exact model that your communist president is using for his mind, that backs up his mindset. I'm not gonna tell you I am shocked by any of this. What I'm telling you is I'm shocked that anybody who works for a living would ever vote for this. For this guy ever again. I don't understand how anybody, and I don't care what their race is, I don't care what their age is, how anybody who works for a paycheck could ever vote for this man is beyond me. What do you think? Are you offended by Obama's remarks, or do you think he's right? Gina, New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
I'm very offended. You know, my husband is a doctor, and he came from upstate New York. He came from the sticks, came from nothing. Put himself through college, through a scholarship because he's smart and he got there on his own. Ended up with student loans, put himself through medical school, which now he has $300,000 to pay back. Nobody's helping him pay that back. You know, he's working.
But Obama would argue that the government, through their subsidies, built the medical school.
Right, exactly.
But that doesn't mean that. But that doesn't mean that anybody can make it through the medical school, does it?
No, absolutely not.
It's still up to the individual with the brains and the drive and the willingness to put in those years to become a doctor. See, it doesn't mean that just because the government helped put up the bricks and mortar that every moron in the street can become a doctor. Well, of course, that's not true, because under Obama soon, every moron will be able to be a doctor.
That's right.
All right, look, it's very dangerous what we have here. You know what our biggest problem is? It's not even Obama. It's the fact that he's a nice man. I know he didn't mean to say it. He's a nice man. This is not going to win, Mr. Romney. Mr. Romney, stop it. Mr. Romney, please stop it. Stand up and say what I am saying. You'll win by 30 points. Sacramento, California. Did the government help you, Darren?
Hey, Michael, how are you? Yeah, we have a live theater company up here, a professional. We don't take any money from anybody. We employ between 10 and 15 people. We have worked our butts off for 23 years. My dad works 6-7 days a week, 12 hours a day, and the government does nothing. The statement that Obama made is just absolutely beyond the pale, man. It's disgusting.
Well, you're going to vote for him, though, right?
Yeah, right. There's no.
You're going to tell everybody that you meet that Obama's right, that the government built your family business, and that without Big Brother, you couldn't do anything.
You know, you made a statement a while back that I absolutely agree with, and I've felt this way for years, many years, and that is we succeed despite what the government does to us.
Bingo. That's right. You know, in Sacramento, you own a theater. How many city, state, and federal inspectors have come around to bother you or do come around to plague your theater? Numerous.
Well, interesting. Well, we have the local health, and that's not a huge deal. They don't give us too much of a hassle. We run a clean ship, but our theater actually burnt down at one point, and that turned into a major, major nightmare dealing with the bureaucrats. And then, of course, we had to do this, and we had to do that, and we ended up shrinking our house size, so we lost because we had to make the aisles different.
The seats. The seats are a problem in a theater for a bureaucrat. In fact, you should see, to a bureaucrat, the ideal theater would have no seats. To a bureaucrat, you have to understand how Obama thinks. You're a family who owns a theater, right? He would like to start from fresh, take out all the seats, and replace the seats with nothing so that people can't stumble in there. See, that would be a safe theater. In fact, the theater shouldn't even have a stage because those lights could fall down and burn an actor, right?
Michael,
no, think about it. All those electrical wires, people use microphones, correct? They could get electrocuted. To a bureaucrat, you should have no microphones and no lights and no seats in the theater. That would be the ultimate Obama theater. It should be simply a place to go to collect a welfare check and get a 50-pound bin of cheese, government cheese. 1-800-4. I'm laughing at it because I don't know how anyone working. See, here's the problem. You know what's going on here. This is baby talk. Right? We know what's going on. This is naked Marxism. He knows that 50% of America doesn't work, and he wants it to be something like 60%. He knows he doesn't want it higher than 60%, bum, because he still needs the 40% slaves to support the 60% Democrat voter. So he'll bring it right up to that breaking point where he has the plurality he will need to be president for the rest of the century. He will eliminate term limits. Mark my words, if this dictator is not defeated in November, this dictator with the stroke of a pen will eliminate term limits, and the Republicans will do very little to stop him. The Supreme Court he already owns. He's proven he owns Roberts. Proves that they've blackmailed Roberts into submission. Nobody knows what pictures they have on Roberts, if that's the explanation, because no other explanation makes sense. Roberts was illogical in what he said. And so I tell you, if you still vote for this man, you prove one of two things. One, you are collecting a government subsidy in some way. Two, you are collecting a government contract in some way. Three, you are a government worker, or you live with someone who was a government worker. Four, you are totally bonkers. You don't know what you're doing. You haven't any idea what's going on. That's it. There's no other explanation. Nobody should vote for this man who works for a living. Nobody. New York, Lisanne, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. I have a small business in Connecticut, which you know is the liberalism is a mental disorder headquarters of the Northeast. And I swear, people actually rooted for my business to lose because they were so jealous. Because I have four children, I stayed up every night working hard. My husband works full time. I mean, we busted in this family. And I just was flabbergasted. I honestly couldn't believe it when Obama said, if you have a successful business, it's not you. I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a joke.
No, I understand. I understand. So how anyone could vote for him is the real issue. I don't have an answer for that. Joe, Pittsburgh, Don, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, what's going on? I'm 100% angry. I own a tattoo studio, and I've owned it for the last 25 years, and nobody paid for my dermatology classes or my pathogen training or my cross-contamination or my city-level license, my county license, my federal license, my state license. Didn't nobody do that for me. I did it for myself. Didn't nobody ever sit down and do a tattoo for me. I always did them for myself. And for Obama, a guy who I actually voted for, I feel robbed. I feel cheated. I feel like I...
Well, here's the thing to look forward to. If Obama the dictator is reelected, God forbid, they will eliminate the private tattoo parlor, and then the government will apply tattoos to all Americans. And you'll be divided according to race and according to income. They can tattoo the inside of your forearm and divide you according to race, religion, income level. But it will be done by a government tattoo artist. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and not only that, but it seems like every year there's more legislation that comes down, more hoops that we've got to jump through for OSHA or for the state.
The government knows a lot about tattoos. They learned from their German counterparts in the 1930s all about tattooing. And I think that Big Sis and Department of Homeland Security probably has a dossier on the proper methods of government tattooing. So I would think that you should be looking for another profession. And by the way, on a serious note, if you listen to my show, you're a tattoo guy. I have no tattoos on my body. If you were to choose one tattoo for Michael Savage, what would it be of?
Probably the bullseye, because when you put your bullseye on somebody, it usually takes care of itself.
Oh, so you're actually my enemy.
No, I agree with most of what you say there. Sometimes I lean a little bit to the other way, but, you know, when I'm a small business owner and, you know, you're actually out there making it, trying to make it easier for the small business owner to make it in today's society, and it seems like the government's...
Yes, but why would you suggest that I have a bullseye on my skin? What would that... I don't understand. What does that symbolize but making me a target?
I'm saying if we were to pick a tattoo for you and make it your logo, I would make it a bullseye, a Michael Savage bullseye, because when you put your bullseye on somebody, like you are on the like this idiot in office.
Oh, what you're saying is when I make a statement, it's usually right on target. I see. We think so differently. I couldn't follow you, my friend. Yeah, well, look, if a small business owner like yourself, an artisan, a tattoo artist, is starting to have regrets about Obama, do you think this man can get reelected?
No, absolutely not. And people are in my tattoo chair and they're talking to me, and for some reason the subject turns to politics, negative, 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 negative Obama, we're waiting for somebody else is all I hear. And that's at a tattoo studio. So you know that's going on in the halls of the city municipal
building. See, I think, you know, Don, this is a very important call, because I truly believe if the election were honestly held today and if we could weed out the millions of illegal aliens who Obama wants to vote for him, and the multiple voting in Boca Raton and in New York, people from Brooklyn and Queens will vote three or four times. If we could eliminate the multiple votes and the illegals, I think he'd lose by 20 points even with tepid Mitt Romney. I really do. People want anybody but Obama right now. They're sick of this guy. They know he's a fraud. They know he's a con man. And more than that, they know he's dangerous. Thanks for the call. I don't want to say any more because then the bullseye will... You know what I mean? That's it. That's all I can say to you. I'll be back.
Savage.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own. You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there. It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there.
So there's communism. That's Karl Marx, Obama. That's Hugo Chavez, Obama. That's Joseph Stalin, Obama. That's Pol Pot, Obama. This is a very dangerous man. This is a very dangerous man. I have studied dictatorships all of my adult life. You want me to get very serious now? And let me remind you of something that you may not know because you just don't know it. Things don't start the way they end. They start with almost innocent remarks like this. Hitler did not start with Treblinka. Hitler did not start with Dachau. Hitler did not start with death camps. Hitler started with rather benign racial purity laws, and no one stopped him. The rhetoric of Hitler, by the way, was not written by Hitler. It was originally written by French anti-Semites in the century preceding Hitler. But it was benign at the time. The rhetoric that Obama is expressing is not his own rhetoric. This is what is deeply embedded in the man's brainstem. He has been inculcated with hatred for the American way from the cradle. He has been reinforced by his mother, God rest her soul. By his grandmother and grandfather were avowed Marxists. All of his mentoring was that of this rhetoric. This did not come out of the blue. This is in the man's DNA. This is in the man's DNA. It's anti-American, anti-capitalist, anti-business, anti-success rhetoric. It is the rhetoric of Karl Marx. It is the rhetoric of Fidel Castro. It is the rhetoric of Pol Pot. Pol Pot, most of you don't know who he was. Maybe you saw a movie 20 years ago called, I forget the name of it. It ended with a mountain of skulls. In Cambodia, 3 million people were slaughtered by the Khmer Rouge. Who were the 3 million people? How did it happen? Pol Pot was a benign, a rather mild-mannered leader of Cambodia, a professor, as a matter of fact, a professor like Obama. And he went to Paris and he studied Marxism. He came back from Paris a flaming communist, and he instituted what he was taught in Paris in the universities, He instituted communism in his native Cambodia. He unleashed the uneducated 13 and 14-year-old gangs who tied red ribbons around their heads and called them the Khmer Rouge, red. They went out. They rampaged through the countryside, through the cities. They beat up anyone who was successful. They arrested anyone who was successful. They stole from anyone successful. They imprisoned and worked to death and tortured anyone who was successful. Anyone who had eyeglasses was considered an enemy of the state. Teachers, doctors, lawyers, engineers, police chiefs, architects. Everybody who worked hard for what they had was seen as an enemy of the communist state of Cambodia. You say, now, Savage, what does that have to do with that nice man in the White House with such a nice wife and such nice children? I'll let you figure out two and two. It starts with rhetoric like this. It unleashes the genie in the bottle. It justifies any acts of betrayal, any acts of hatred, any acts of sabotage against the successful. It unleashes the genie of hate. Obama is the most hateful man who has ever plagued the White House. You'll notice I'm stepping up my rhetoric because nobody else will step up the rhetoric. They're playing catch up. This man is the most dangerous, most divisive, most evil, I'll use the word evil, president in the history of America. Everything is at stake in November. Unfortunately, on the other side, we have Mr. Peepers, Mr. Milktoast, Mr. Check Pants, Mr. Country Club, Mr. Nice Guy. I'll remind you of something else. Nice guys don't finish last, Mr. Romney. They don't finish at all.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life. Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. The internet didn't get invented on its own. Government research created the internet. If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own.
No.
Get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well
you
must
got the picture. We have a naked communist. I've been telling you this for 3.5 years. Most of you doubted me. Many of you are social liberals, so you figure whatever he does is good because you don't want to vote for the rigid Christian on the other side. Because basically it's all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll to most Americans under the age of whatever. Now you're coming to understand that Barack Obama dismisses any success you have as your own. It's the government that built your tattoo parlor. It's the government that put you through medical school. It's the government that drives you 100 hours a week as a lawyer. It's the government that keeps you on the radio. It's the government that built the... It wasn't Marconi or Tesla who invented the microphone. Radio, rather. It wasn't Tesla who invented radio. It was Obama's great-grandfather or someone else in government that we don't know yet. Perhaps Big Sis's grandmother invented the microphone. We don't know. It was some genius in Washington or in the state capitol who invented the microphone, the telephone, the whirlpool machine, the street light. It was all invented by somebody in government. It was not invented by an individual in an enterprise system. That's passé, the idea of enterprise. It's governments that should run everything, according to Obama. Eventually, there should be one channel, OBC, Obama Broadcast Corporation. Everything that's said on the air comes through central command, Obama Broadcast Corporation. And then we'll have a cleaner system. You know, competition, by the way, is messy and expensive. Look at North Korea, how clean and beautiful it is. There's a country with no competition. Everything's run through the psychopath that runs North Korea. That's the kind of system that Obama would like in America, where everything goes through Alibaba and the 40 thieves. Alibaba and the 40 thieves will decide, as the central clearinghouse, what you think, what you read, what you say, what you eat, what you breathe, where you swim, the shoes you wear should be government shoes. Why do you need all of this clutter of shoes made in slave factories in Indonesia, or whatever? What you need are shoes made by the government. Government shoes. Obama Shoe Corporation. You need government tires. Why do you want such competition? Look at the amount of money wasted on advertising between tire companies. So capitalistic, so wasteful. Why not have a government tire company? Obama Tire Company. He already has the Volt. Look how many people have lined up to buy his electric car. We know how good the electric car is. It's something modeled along the lines of the car made in Yugoslavia that everybody couldn't wait to get. Or the Russian car. You notice how great the Russian cars are, or the Chinese cars. People can't wait to get them. American cars, cars built on the backs of entrepreneurs, those are passé. They're wasteful. But we need our government cars, government jobs, government microphones, government everything. So I rest my case. Forget the sarcasm. We have the most dangerous, divisive presidency in American history. Unfortunately, we don't have anyone on the other side articulating it, so it falls upon the shoulders of myself and a few others, frankly, in the media. If it wasn't for us, you'd be living in a total dictatorship of ideas. How do you feel about the president saying that somebody else made your business happen? How do you feel about him saying that if you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own? Now, what he's doing here, and again, you can call me at the phone number, 1-800-449-8255. What he is doing here is reflecting the inner Obama. Here is a man who from the cradle has been steeped in communist rhetoric of this type. You don't want to believe it, but you better believe it. He's showing himself for what he is. He hates the American way. He hates the American system. He hates capitalism. He hates the foundations of democracy. He hates the founding fathers. He hates everything that we stand for in this country. And he is showing himself as he cracks up on the road. And I am worried, very deeply worried about the president's mental and physical well-being, not only by the fact that when he goes off script, he shows us who he actually is, but that he's wasting away in size and in girth. The man is dangerously thin. As someone who has studied health all of his life, as an amateur now, not as a medical doctor, but as an amateur looking in on health things, I would say that Obama is right now dangerously thin. He is dangerously thin-skinned and dangerously thin in weight, certainly dangerously thin in mental capacity. He is cracking up from the strain. Now, that's both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because the real Obama is coming out from the hidden Obama. The hidden agenda is starting to emerge from the nice guy agenda. Unfortunately, we have no one on the other side to help us. Let's take the callers from around America on this issue of whether or not somebody else made that happen. Was it a government agent who built your business, or is it a government agent who tries to destroy your business at every turn? Anyone who knows what business is knows that the government stands in the way of your business. They do not help you in any way. The government stands only to hinder you, not to help you. I tried to add a little wall to a little house I own. It took me 3 years and $10,000 in permits. Every degenerate criminal in the government, in the town that I live in, had a handout for a permit. Thousands of dollars in permits. Why? Because the permits basically are payola to the bureaucrats so they can have big fat pensions when they retire. The government bureaucrats, city, state, local, federal, have bankrupted this country, and they will continue to do so unless we the people stop them. And Obama represents the unions. He represents the pensioners from the governmental jobs who are bankrupting this country. California is an example. City after city is falling like dominoes. The state is bankrupt. because we have a governor who has catered to the illegal alien and to the unions, so the state is bankrupt. Instead of catering to business, he runs businesses out of the state. Instead of asking businesses to come into the state, Jerry Brown tells businesses to get out of the state. Instead of helping businesses stay in the state, he sends bureaucrats out after them to see if he can drive them out of the state. He and Obama have the same exact mentality. They are naked Marxists. They've never worked a day in their life to create a product or a service that anybody actually needed. They are paper pushers, and they are simply hot air pushers. By the way, there's an old tape that nobody has. When Obama was running for office, it stuck in my mind. The year was what, 07, 08? I forget already when the regime took over this country. He said in a joke once, we don't really do anything. He said, we just push paper. He said almost in passing. He was talking about himself and his government cronies. He said, we don't really do anything. We don't make anything. He said, we just push paper. Now he's telling you as a business person, you didn't do it on your own. It was someone else who did it for you. This, to me, should be the fulcrum of the rest of the campaign. If Romney had any real desire to win, which I'm not sure of, if Obama had advisors who were not really Brutuses who were stabbing him in the back, which I'm not sure of, they would take this soundbite and collect them with the other soundbites, and they would win this election by 20 points. Unfortunately, they won't do it. They're running another McCain, and I have a terrible fear that the fix is in. But let's get back to this issue at hand. How do you feel that the president is saying that if you are successful, you didn't do it on your own? It wasn't going to school. It wasn't saving all of your money and investing it in a small business which grew. No. It was the government cheese that did it. It was not your brains and your guts that built it. Let us begin with Eric in Las Vegas. Eric, tell us about your business.
Yeah, hi. I guess I'd be much considered in the 2%, which is probably a dirty word, but I started like 40 years ago in a motel with one motel business, and over the years, due to hard work and whatever, I'm now a partner in a hotel casino in the city. And it wasn't due to the government help. It was due to hard work.
But does the government in Nevada, Harry Reid's bureaucrats, do they help your casino or do they try to impede it?
Well, they like the revenue from the gambling taxes, yes. But they don't help particularly.
Let me ask you. I don't know you. You don't know me, Eric. Are you a Democrat generally or not?
I'm a moderate Republican.
Do you feel that if the election were held today, more people would vote against Obama than we're being told about in the media, or by the media, rather?
I really fear that they won't. I don't
why?
Think so.
No, this is interesting. Tell me why.
Because we're not getting any, on the Republican side, we're not getting any kind of fight.
Yes, and that's it. You're a man who lives in Nevada, so you know what it's all about. It's warfare. You know that it's a struggle, a daily struggle, and it's warfare, that business is warfare and that survival is warfare. Somehow Romney doesn't seem to understand that. That's what we're all saying. Isn't that true?
Well, yeah, but what else is important? If he picks a vice president, he better not pick somebody stronger than him. Because if he does, it's going to make him look even weaker.
Who would you pick as a VP candidate for him?
God. Probably.
Let's start. Would you pick Rice?
Possibly, but she's stronger than he is.
It's very hard to find somebody weaker than him. I mean, I'm sorry to say it. Who could he pick that's weaker than him?
Well, look, his wife stepped all over him in an interview.
Well, I'm the only one who said it. Remember what I said? Is she doing more harm than good by stepping on him in the interview? I'm the only one who said that.
Well, that made him look weak. And if he picks a stronger vice president, that's going to make him look even weaker. I don't know where to go on this point. But what
all right. Well, look, your main point is that you're offended by Obama's remarks because your family built this business on their own, right? It wasn't through the government's help.
But let me just give you one more statement, that there have been surveys or studies made that if you took every cent from every person in the United States and divided equally amongst everybody in the country, within a couple of years, the people who had the money before will have it again due to their intelligence, their business acumen, their hard work, so forth.
Well, so that's proof that Obama's right. They should take everything that we who work have earned, then give it to those who don't work because we'll have it again. No, the actual argument to make, if I may say so, is that I've seen studies that if every millionaire was taxed at 100% of their income, it still wouldn't dent the deficit created by men like Obama.
Really.
The only answer is cutting spending. The only answer is firing 20% of the federal workforce. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think you all know that I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
You see, there's the alpha and omega of this discussion we're having. That was Ronald Reagan saying those are the 9 most frightening words in the English language. I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Obama, of course, has the opposite view, which is I'm from the government and I'm here to help. You decide. I report, you decide. It's that simple. Obama is a naked Marxist. He has been from childhood. This is the inner man finally showing because he's cracking under the strain. He's going off script. And he's finally showing you what he actually believes. Problem is, 50% or so of the American people don't pay any taxes. They don't work. They live off our backs, those of us who work or have created something that people need. And that's the name of the game. And eventually, when it reaches a saturation point where there are more of those who are leeches than there are those of us who support the leeches, the entire society implodes, and you have a catastrophe. You have a total catastrophe. You have a catastrophe, and this man is a catastrophe in the making. He is literally a revolutionary. He has been a revolutionary all his life. He's trying to foment a revolution. Only he's so good at what he's doing, you don't even see him for what he is, most of you. You don't see it. I mean, I'm paid to see it. And I don't know how anybody, even social liberals, who, let's say you're a social liberal and you don't want to vote with a conservative. But if you're a social liberal who has some wealth, or a social liberal who works for a living and wants to hold on to a little more of your money so you can spend it your own way, or you're a social liberal who doesn't want the government in every aspect of your life, I would say you could never ever vote for a Democrat again because they're not Democrats, they're socialists. And a socialist government is involved in your life from the cradle to the grave. Over the weekend, I went to a little restaurant I go to, a Basque restaurant. They were having Bastille Day. I didn't even know it till I got there. I ran there when I heard Bastille Day. They said, oh, there'd be almost no tables. I'll give you one, Michael. They had some music. It was really something, a little outdoor thing out in the country in Marin County. I love it, right? So as I'm there with a glass of wine, a woman comes up and she says, Michael, you changed my life. I used to be a liberal. I said, look, let's look at each other. I don't know you. You don't know me. You were probably a liberal and you still are a liberal. What you finally discovered is that you're against government intrusion in your life. So you're very much like me. You haven't changed your social policies. See, most of the people I know call themselves conservatives are actually still liberals from the 60s. They're people who don't like the government interfering with their lives. Some of us have evolved to the point where we understand that government is not your friend. Government is actually your enemy. So those of us who see that as, say, oh, we're a libertarian or a conservative or an independent. But others who are locked into this liberal doxy are afraid to say, I'm not a liberal, because they're afraid that they'll be ostracized by their pals. The fact of the matter is, though, if you like freedom, then you're not a liberal. If you like independent thinking, then you're not a liberal. If you like the government out of your life, then you're not a liberal. If you want to hold on to more of your money than the government takes from you, then you are not a liberal. If you don't want the government dictating to you what you can eat, breathe, where you can, then you are not a liberal. And that, my friends, summarizes the entire election. Obama is a hardcore government control freak who wants to not only control you, but he has the gall to suggest that your success is his, not yours. Think of the narcissism of this man. He takes credit for building the roads. He takes credit for building the internet. He thinks he did it. Narcissism. Pathology. Savvy. Here are some of the other headlines on the Savage Nation. Stop political attacks, Mitt Romney tells Obama. Ooh, I've turned the other cheek, and you're a nice man. Stop the political attacks, Mitt tells Obama. You're a nice man with a nice family. But can't you be nice, says Mitt to Obama. I've turned the other cheek, like the Bible says. You're a nice man. I'm appealing to your good side, says Mitt Romney. U.S. Navy ship kills one after firing at boat off Dubai. As I say, no doubt the Navy will be investigated by Obama's investigators. Because after all, a warship is not meant to fire anything. It's meant as a training grounds for diversity training. A warship should have no guns. The new American Navy, of course, are nothing but floating brothels and birthing clinics in order to advance the social agenda. For example, it came out today that the new Navy carriers that Obama is going to be building, to show you his mindset, will be gender neutral and there will be no urinals. Because you can't have men and women on a carrier. You have to have crash dummies. Just crash dummies without any secondary sexual characteristics in order to make certain that the world vision of socialism advances. Perhaps the manuals can be printed in Esperanto rather than in English. What else is in the news? Heat advisory issued for New York City. Thank God I was there last week and left. Horrible. Whew. The garbage. Don't get me started again on the garbage in New York. See, you really smell certain things on the... See, this is interesting how it relates to Obama. Under certain environmental pressures, things that are normally in the background become, you know, move into the foreground. So in New York, you could ignore the garbage bags. But during a heat wave, it's like, whew, that stinks. Ugh. Why is there garbage all over the streets in these bags, right? It's like, what is this? The city's filthy. I can't ignore it. It's like Obama's under this great pressure. Suddenly, he's losing weight, and his actual thoughts are breaking free of the teleprompter. So he's saying to you, if you have success, you didn't do it on your own. Let's say you're a Garmin Center left-winger. Let's say you listen to me in New York. Who's that guy, Savage? Yeah, say, I don't listen to him. I'm a Democrat. I'm a proud liberal. Yeah, who does he think he is? You know what I like him? He tells his stories about me. Let's say you're a Garmin Center moron, an average idiot in the Garmin Center of New York, a left-wing fool who grew up on seltzer, Lox, and communism. Or shall I say seltzer, Lox, and Marx, which is not a bad poem. Maybe I'll do a poem called Seltzer, Lox, and Marx. It goes together. It has a nice a ring to it. But I'm not ready to break into a song right now. But let's say you're a New York moron who grew up on Seltzer, Marx, and Lox. And you have a garment business. Oh, I'm a Democrat. I don't care about that Romney. I don't like that Romney. I'm voting for Obama. I like that Savage. I listen to him. I don't believe a word he says. But, you know, he's fun. He's funny, you know. So let's say you're an average moron who works in a garment center. And you started with nothing. You went to work for someone's uncle, and you started with nothing. And you built up a line of ties. And in time, the tie took off, whatever your tie was. And you built a tie company, Windsor Tie Corporation. And before long, your ties, you didn't just build it out of nothing. The government didn't say, here's a plan on how to build a tie company. You did it on your own. You had an idea for a tie. You went and borrowed money from your Uncle Lou. Uncle Lou gave you $25,000 in 1964. You made the investment. You were worried. You didn't sleep at night. It took off. You made more money. You paid back Uncle Lou. And then you borrowed more money, and you built a factory in North Carolina when America was still making ties, etc., and you became a wealthy man. Obama would say you didn't do it. Obama would say the government did it. But that's not enough for you, because you're a smart guy from Queens or Brooklyn, and you know that those Republicans are just nothing but Christian Tea Party guys. You don't want to vote for them. Nah, you got to vote for one of your own kind. You got to vote for an Obama. You know what I mean? Because you know so much. You know everything. Whatever you're told, you don't know. You don't want to believe anybody who speaks from the other side. What do they know? They don't know nothing. You're a good lifetime Democrat, and you're a proud liberal in Manhattan. You know everything. Even though you built your tie company, and you built it through guts and through investment, and even though Obama tells you and slaps you in the face and says, you didn't get there on your own, listen again to clip two. You got to hear that one liner out of clip two. Listen to it.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own.
That's all I want to rest my case. I rest my case. That one line, if I were advising Mitt turn the other cheek Romney too many times, if I were advising Mitt turn the cheek too many times Romney, I would say take that one line, take a little, see, mix with a little Jeremiah Wright, mix in with a few of the other Obama fantastics, and you have the election in your hand, the world is yours. He'll get up there and say he's a nice man. Please stop it. But this is the same Mitt Romney who's told not to come near Michael Savage. Only go on ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, and safe fake Republican shows. Don't go anywhere near independent conservative shows like Michael Savage. You know, I don't need him on my show. He's not welcome. I'll tell you again. I'm going to say it again. I would be very uncomfortable to have Romney on the show because I don't think it would be good radio, to be frank. Yeah, I got to tell you that. Unless I got a call. Oh, I got him on. I know the advisor, and they want to be on finally. And I would not want Mitt Romney on this show. It would be very uncomfortable for me, and it would be bad radio. I specialize in very good radio, and I think that having a politician on generally is bad radio. But a guy like him is a very bad radio. I'd rather have Obama on the show than Mitt Romney. Because I would ask Obama how his rhetoric differs from that of Karl Marx. Or is he sorry that he said that if you're successful, you didn't get there on your own? That's what I would say to Barack Obama. And I would say to you, how dare you? Do you actually believe, Mr. Obama, that someone else made your business happen? That the government did it for people? Aren't you sorry you said that? And I'll tell you the truth. I think he probably would say he didn't mean it that way. Sorry he said it. He's smart enough to know that. If he was really being advised well, he would apologize for what he said. He's just alienated every business owner in America. But he's doing it by the numbers. He knows that if he can get more of the losers and the lazy to vote for him than those who work for a living and pay taxes, he's got it made. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. What else is going on? Syria, you forgot about it. Millions of dead, thousands dead, but Syria's over. That was last week's news. What you, all you care about is Heidi Klum and Seal on the deck of a ship. Syria, forget about it. I'm not serious about Syria. What's going on there? What do they make there? Dates? I don't care. I don't want to know about it, no. I don't care about Obama's inaction. Egypt, I don't care about that. I don't care that he blew up the Middle East. I don't care that they spit at Hillary Clinton. So Hillary Clinton got pelted with tomatoes in Egypt with her friends, the Islamists, chanting Monica, Monica. Maybe they're all Republicans. I could have this all wrong. I mean, Hillary Clinton had her Nixon moment. Remember, Nixon was spat upon in South America. Remember, that was a story for years? Went to South America, and they spit at him in a limo. Now, Hillary goes to Egypt, and they throw tomatoes at her, and they scream at her, Monica, Monica, Monica. So she had her Nixon moment. I'm starting to think that maybe the Islamists, in a strange way, are all Republicans, but I didn't know it. It could be that all the Islamists in Egypt, could be the Muslim Brotherhood is a secret Republican front group. I don't know the way things work in the world. I'm starting to think maybe we should offer asylum to 80 million Egyptian Islamists. Because then if they come over here, they'll all vote R rather than D. You never know. You never can tell the way the things work in the world and how the, you know, interconnected. The internet may be interconnected, but it's not interconnected in the ways that we think it is. Oh, boy, it's bad out there. A jury selection begins for four men accused of stealing $5.7 million from Columbia University. Shocking. Shocking. Four men, never named. If they're white males, they're pictured, bald head and all. If they're not white males, no pictures, no name. Jury selection begins for four men. It's like the terrorists. Men agree to me. Men plead guilty to wanting to blow up Washington Monument. Men. A man. A Virginia man pled guilty. No picture. But if they look like Timothy McVeigh, blue eyes, blonde hair, then slap, bam, my damn, my ma'am, slap, whatever, on the front picture. Let's see. They do have names. I'm sorry. Was busted in December getting inside his brand new $80,000 Audi Q7. $200,000 in cash. Well, that's diversity. You have to understand that the reason the universities are doing so well today is because of the diversity in hiring. And just that four bad apples happen to be diverse in appearance, in name, in sound, doesn't mean that all people of diverse backgrounds do this. It means that only they did. And so, therefore, don't end diversity. Look how good diversity has been for us with regard to the presidency. I mean, if it wasn't for affirmative action. See, in that sense, Obama's right. When he says that if you're successful, you didn't get there on your own, someone else made that happen, what he's doing is reflecting his own failures and his own insecurities. You want me to get really hardcore, bullseye, psychoanalytical? He's reflecting the fact that in deep down he knows he doesn't deserve what he has because someone else made his presidency happen. He didn't get where he is on his own. Someone put him there. Someone greased the skids for him going back to grade school. Someone must have greased the skids for him to get into Punahou on a full scholarship. Someone greased the skids for him to get into Columbia. Someone greased the skids for him to get into Harvard. Someone greased the skids for him to become the law review bigwig. Someone greased the skids for him to become Senator Obama. And then, of course, the rest is history. So he's really just reflecting his own insecurities. That's the way you have to look at it. You have to have compassion for him. And if it was Mitt Romney, what he should do is get up tomorrow. And Mitt Romney should say, now, I know Mr. Obama's a nice man. And although he said that your success in your business is not yours, I think you ought to forgive him. Because that's the Christian way. Yeah, well, it isn't the talk radio way, necessarily. I'll be right back.
Savage.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own.
No, I didn't get there on my own.
You,
I'm
you
70.
Didn't get there on your
no,
own.
No, I didn't get there. No, I didn't get there. Oh, yeah. From age five, I was selling used comic books at my father's store, saving my money. I didn't get there on my own. In the beginning of radio, I had to walk on broken glass. I had to swim on burnt hot coals. Everyone stood in my way and tried to defeat me. No, I didn't get there on my own. To this day, I'm fighting for my life. But no, I didn't get there on my own. This man knows nothing about the entrepreneurial spirit because it was never indoctrinated in him. He was told from the time he was a child that capitalism is evil, that people who invest in things are all crooks, and that only government bureaucrats are good, honest, clean people. Successful people are crooks unless they give him money. Then they're good crooks, good successful people. Somebody else made that happen, he said. Somebody built the internet. The internet didn't happen on its own. Well, why doesn't he seize the internet from Google? What he really ought to do now is seize all of Google's assets, like his brother Chavez, and say to the Google billionaires who land at the Ames Center, they land their 767 private jet plane at a government-owned airport, which no one's ever said a word about because it's in Nancy Pelosi's backyard, and say to the Google boys, you know what, we're seizing your assets and your airplane because you didn't invent the internet and you made a fortune on it. The government research created the internet. We're taking your entire business. That's the logical outgrowth of what he's saying, isn't it? Now, here's an example. Drought now grips more than half of the nation. That's a very, very frightening story. You remember the Dust Bowl stories from the 30s, the Grapes of Wrath, the Great Depression? Only in the 1930s and the 50s has a drought covered more land than right now. Saying, oh, there's a little risk of a Dust Bowl-type catastrophe, say the government microcephalics. They don't know, though. But across America, topsoil has turned dry while crops are dying. Cattle are dying because they can't grow the corn necessary to feed the cattle. Pigs are dying because they don't have the money to buy bushels of replacement feed. And so food prices are going to go through the ceiling unless rains come. Let me ask you something. Where's the government on this? How's the government going to help the farmers whose corn and wheat crops are dying because of the drought? What's the Agriculture Department going to do for them? 80% of the Agriculture Department is given over to giving out food stamps right now, not to helping farmers. Everything's been stolen. Everything in the American government has been turned over to the welfare state. So we have a very serious drought, one of the worst in modern American history. And the fact of the matter is, it's similar to the droughts of the 1950s, not yet as intense as those of the 1930s. But no one knows how long this drought is going to last. Half of corn crop is going in Kansas. If there's no rain, it's going to die. Farmers are saying, I've never seen this type of weather before. I just think we're seeing history in the making. But what is the federal government going to do? Nothing. Tell me what the federal government is going to do. After all, the federal government is the man who gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning to milk the cows, isn't it? It's some fat bureaucrat in the U.S. Department of Agriculture who flies to Malaysia on a junket to see prostitutes. That's the real hog farmer, isn't it? Some government bureaucrat who does nothing. Tell me what the government's going to do. Tell me what the government can do in a drought like this. Well, I'll tell you what they can do, but what they're not going to do. What the government can do is release some of the insane environmental restrictions that they've imposed and permit lake water and river water to be diverted for irrigating the crops. Do you actually think that any of the idiots who work for Obama are going to release waters from lakes and rivers to nourish the crops that are dying? You know that they'd rather see the crops die than the river dry up. You know that they have everything backwards. Here's a classic example of an idiot government that has no ability to help the American people. The wise thing would be to release waters from lakes and rivers right now before it gets worse. Because if they don't release lake and river water right now, grain prices are going to go through the roof. Higher food prices will result. And we're going to have higher prices in meat and poultry. But don't tell that to the government bureaucrats that Obama is so proud of. No, don't tell him that. He'll just tell you that the hardworking farmer didn't make it on his own. It was somebody else who built up that family farm. It was somebody else in the government who made that farm successful. Some fat bureaucrat sitting on a fat chair in Washington, D.C. That's the real hero of the American farm. And so this is a very serious program today filled with I would say, cutting sarcasm, because that's one of my principal tools in stocks and trade. Obama is revealing himself as he cracks under the pressure of the campaign. We the people are shocked that there's no opposition, none whatsoever. We have a meek, tepid, milquetoast candidate in the form of Mitt Romney, whatever his name is. Mitt Romney saying, oh, he's a nice man. He really ought to call off his attack staff. They're saying those things about me. Mitt, nice guys don't finish last, Mitt. They don't finish at all. And you're a genuinely nice man. But somewhere within that decent man, there must be a tough man, or you wouldn't be where you are, Mitt. Somewhere within that man who has such a lovely family with so many wonderful sons and grandchildren, there must be a very strong man. And I would say that even strong men have to sometimes fight, Mitt. Even though it may violate your biblical teachings, at some point, Mitt, you're going to have to take the gloves off and start hitting back at Alibaba and the 40 thieves. Because, Mitt, let me tell you something you didn't read in missionary school. There are bad people on this planet. Not all people can be saved, Mitt. You have to understand that Alibaba and the 40 thieves are out for blood, Mitt. They're out to destroy you, Mitt, and if you don't wake up and you don't start fighting back, Mitt, you're not going to win the election because people don't even know you exist. You're so nice, you're non-existent. You're like a daytime soap opera talk show host. They don't even know who you are. You're like a nice talking head on NBC or CBS or ABC, Mitt, and that's not what people need to fight Alibaba and the 40 thieves. No, Mitt, you got to start to fight back. You got to take the sound bites like I've been playing today, and you better link them up, and you better paste them together, and you better start running them in gazillion-dollar ads across America so people finally know the danger we are in. Yes, every business person in this country knows who's in the White House. Every business person will vote for you, Mr. Romney, unless they're living off government contracts. But we have to reach all those out there who work for these business people who don't yet understand that it's the entrepreneur that creates the businesses that they work for, Mr. Romney. Put two and two together for them. Because if they really could add, they wouldn't be working for someone. They'd be owning a business and have others working for them. They can't add that well, Mr. Romney. They're followers, not leaders. And we the people need a leader, someone to explain that Obama's a naked Marxist who thinks the government built everything and the government wants to control everything. It's as simple as that. And I rest my case. I've done everything I can do to awaken America to the danger we are in from the naked Marxist. Read Trickle Down Tyranny before it's too late.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And-
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Listen to some of the audio that we play today for you on the Savage Nation for your listening displeasure. Here is how Obama really feels about small business owners. He hates you.
Your campaign has criticized Romney and Bain Capital outsourcing jobs, which increases unemployment.
Right.
You have been criticizing him for that, but he says that did not happen on his watch at Bain.
Right.
He has asked for you to apologize. Will you apologize? And if not, why not?
Because the issue here is...
First of all, you're not going to apologize.
No, we won't be apologizing. And I don't, you know, sometimes these games are played during political campaigns. Understand what the issue is here. Mr. Romney claims that he's Mr. Fix-It for the economy because of his business experience. And so I think voters entirely legitimately want to know, well, what exactly was that business experience? And... as the head of a private equity firm, his job was to maximize profits and help wealthy investors. There's nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, that company also was investing in companies that the Washington Post called pioneers of outsourcing. And he's now claiming, well, I wasn't there at the time, except he files an SEC listing that says he was the CEO, chairman, and president of the company.
Here is what Obama thinks about while on the campaign trail.
Thing I hate most, other than being away from the family, is, you know, sometimes when you're on the road, you end up eating an awful lot of stuff that tastes really good at the time, but later on in the day can catch up with you. I'm now getting to the age where being in my own bed as opposed to some other bed, you know, is not always great for my back. I cook a really mean chili. People don't know this, but Michelle can testify now. She'll claim that I haven't cooked it for about 10 years, so I shouldn't get too much credit for it.
Maybe he can hustle pool like Fast Eddie to balance out our national debt.
I am I'm a surprisingly good pool player, so... if you ever see me in a pool hall, don't just think that you can...
Don't walk up and throw down money, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. I might end up cleaning your clock. That's a possibility. And I'm also a pretty good doodler. See, folks don't know that about me. So sometimes when I'm in a big, important international meeting and you see me writing stuff down, it might be that I'm just drawing some folks.
Here is the politically incorrect satire ad. If something like this came out about Obama, people would go to prison.
This is Marvin Lucas, and he is here to get us through this NAACP thing.
Thanks for the intro, Keith. Governor, it's a real pleasure. Now let's get down to brass tacks. Blacks don't like us, and we're about to give a speech to a whole lot of them. So what we want to do is turn their criticisms into an advantage for us. Now I want you to pretend that you're black. Why is it you don't like the governor? Come on, you. Don't speak to me. Speak to the governor. Pretend you're black. Feel it.
Mormons didn't accept blacks into the priesthood until 1978. You were already in your 30s at that point, and you never spoke out against it, or really even acknowledged it was an issue.
Let me be clear about something. This is not about the blacks. Now, Governor, you are a very nice man. You are a very nice white man. You are so white. You are extremely white. You make Wonder Bread look like pumpernickel. This is about keeping the black voters from getting hostile to you, which could scare off the independent white vote. So you go on out there, and you get all Mormon Martin Luther King on them, okay? You're going to be great.
Here is a Florida Democrat comparing youths being charged with felonies to being the equivalent of slavery.
Friday, July the 13th, 8:30 to 12, we are going to have a Free Melissa march and rally, and we need your help. It is not just about Miss Alexander. It's about all of our youth. We have a 300% direct filing in Duval County. 300% direct filing. In other words, we are making our youth felons, a sentence for life. This is a new slavery, and we as a community must stop it. We must stand up.
Here's the hyphenated lunatic from Florida, Wasserman Schultz, saying Republicans have to lie about Obama's record with Israel. We don't have to lie. We know he hates Israel.
We're working hard to reach out to the Jewish community and make sure that we debunk those myths, because the Republicans are working overtime. Mm-hmm. You know, they know that they can't get anywhere with Jewish voters domestically because the Republicans are so dramatically out of step with the Jews on those issues. So what they have to do is resort to lying and distorting and mischaracterizing President Obama's stellar record on Israel so they can try to shave a little bit off in the battleground states like Florida and hopefully close the gap.
Wasserman Schultz then goes on about Obama's record, which is anything but stellar.
So time and again, this president has a stellar record on Israel. I'm proud to stand with him. And unfortunately, we have Republicans who, you know, they know that their candidate has no appeal with Jewish voters on domestic issues. So their only option to try to shave off a few points is to put their love of party in front of their love of Israel, which is dangerous for Israel.
All this and more right here on the one and only, well, Savage Nation. And by the way, welcome to the newly created Socialist States of America. The one book you will need to stop Obama before we lose all of our constitutional rights is Trickle Down Tyranny, in bookstores everywhere. Well, here's all the news that you need to know today from michaelsavage.com and everywhere else on the earth. Let's see. Where shall we begin? Let's see. No more Mr. Nice Guy? Not. Romney is still calling Obama a nice man. I don't know, when you're on the ground being kicked in the groin, you're bleeding, do you say your opponent is a nice man, Matt? Mitt, whatever, Romney? When would you fight back? You're facing a hooligan. You're facing a hooligan from Chicago, surrounded by criminals. Most working people know this. Romney, fight him. Stop it. Who said that? Well, I just said it, but I think others are saying it now. Trump. You name it, everyone who knows what's going on. You got a president who's a naked communist who hates this country, who is making things up. A president who says if you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen. Have you ever heard anything like this? Yes, you have. Fidel Castro, Chavez. He is a naked communist, as I've pointed out repeatedly for the past 3.5 years, and especially in Trickle Up Poverty and Trickle Down Tyranny. You have a communist. He's showing who he is. He's showing what he's made of. The man basically is a panhandler in the White House who got lucky. 1-800-449-8255. U.S. Navy fires on ship in Persian Gulf. One vermin dead. I hope the ship was sunk, the other ship. Now we'll hear that it was poor innocent civilians in an Iranian fishing boat, and that they shouldn't have fired. That's what we'll hear next. Why didn't they reason with the Persians in the fishing boat who were simply coming to trade smelt, sell baskets, and they really meant no harm to the naval ship? What else is on michaelsavage.com? Most illegal alien families collect welfare. They take advantage of American-born anchor babies to milk us dry. Trump says get tougher on Obama lies. Thank you, Donald. Hillary mocked in Egypt, pelted with tomatoes. I guess she had her Nixon moment. Protesters shouted, Monica, Monica, Monica. I guess her friends in the Islamist world don't quite think that well of her. Michael Savage, number two in the world in radio shows streamed on the web. Obama, I'll repeat, says if you've got a business, you didn't build that. Others built it. How about the United Kingdom, where I am banned? A rapist from Sudan, a Sudanese asylum seeker who raped a 12-year-old girl, is allowed to stay in the United Kingdom, but not Michael Savage. Take a look at the face of the white man in England who said that they would be violating his human rights if they sent him back to the Sudan. Let's see, what else? FDA spied on whistleblowing scientists. Really? Obama's FDA spied on someone? Dentist reuses needles and prompts an HIV scare. Nice fella. Kerry Kennedy busted for drugged driving. Something in those Kennedy teeth, I think. Don't know what it is. They must hurt their jaws and they all have to drink, something like that. The teeth are so large that the mandible is stressed to the point where only alcohol will reduce the pain. Thugs in New York City mugged a toddler in a stroller. Brigitte Bardot at Cannes, 1953. But it's a heck of a set of pictures of this young girl in 1953. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation. Wait, hang on before I go. You know, I hate seeing my electric meter spinning around like some crazed hamster wheel. Running the AC is like watching dollar bills fly out of poorly insulated windows. It costs thousands to replace windows, but for a fraction of the cost, you can put gorgeous energy-saving solar shades over your windows from Blinds.com. Blinds.com saves my listeners and me in so many ways. They offer a huge selection of designer blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes at prices lower than Lowe's and Home Depot by posting free online how-to videos that make transforming any room in about 20 minutes very easy and by yourself. Listen, by making measuring so utterly goof-proof that even if you mismeasure, which is next to impossible, they'll remake it for free. Get free color samples, free shipping, no sales tax in most states, plus expert installers if you need one. Save an extra 20% on top brands through July 31st at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, where prices absolutely crush home improvement stores. Don't be blind. Go to Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Did you get it? Blinds.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
To stop spending over $1 trillion more than we take in every year. And so to do that, I'm going to eliminate every non-essential expensive program I can find. That includes Obamacare, and I'm going to work to reform and save.
Can't eliminate the boondoggle. No. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's heating up out there in the Savage Nation. I'm back from Hegira to New York City, the land of my, well, where the graves of my ancestors reside. Let's put it to you that way. I'm back in cool San Francisco. I had to go back to see a medical specialist, and I did. Apparently, the doctors are different on the east and on the west. And nothing to worry about, but I did get a chance to see some sites in New York, which I'll talk about, including my father's store, still a slum. People pay $1 million to live on that street in some slum. The hipsters are running around with cigarettes in their hands, but the trash bags are still 3 feet high in New York City. The streets stink. I mean, I love New York. I have no idea why people live there, but I love it. It's a great place to visit, as they say. I haven't any idea why real estate is booming in Manhattan. The trash bags are 3 feet high. Black bags of trash 2 feet away from people sitting in outdoor tables having dinner. They don't even see the garbage. The city is dirtier than when I was a kid. See, in my day, there were garbage men in New York City. Garbage men in brown uniforms who went around with trucks and you put your trash out in cans. Nobody threw garbage in the street in black bags. These bags are biodegradable? No. They sit in a landfill for several millennia, I would guess. They never break down. And yet the New Yorkers, who are, oh, so sophisticated when it comes to saving the environment, literally eat, sleep, and drink around garbage. Well, hey, who's to account for a man's taste? I'll tell you more about the trip in a few minutes, including the fact that on the way back, as we approached 43,000 feet cruising altitude in my friend's Gulfstream, we went forward to talk to the pilots and noticed that they had their oxygen masks on. So we assumed it was, you know, a test, like a training thing, because I had just got the turkey sandwich I was going to eat to have a beer. I walk forward, the pilot's mumbling like he looked like a B-29 pilot in a World War II movie. And he screams, "Get your masks on! Get back! It's an emergency! Get your masks on!" And the masks all come dangling down in the seats. Ran back, put the mask on. Mrs. S. started to cry. Young Mr. S. held her hand as the plane went down 10,000 feet. I got out a prayer card. I felt nothing. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's wrong with me. I felt no fear, no joy, no elation. I felt nothing. I don't know if that means I'm crazy. I felt nothing. Is there a psychiatrist in the house? Why did I feel nothing at the thought the plane was going to crash? Actually, all I thought was, how sad it would be that my son, who was so young, would, you know what I'm saying? I didn't think about me. I don't know what it means. I have no idea. But nevertheless, it didn't. Turns out a valve that controls the pressure in the plane, jammed up. And we had to go down to a lower altitude to fly home, which we did. No big deal. Could have been a big deal. How do you know what is, right? So now we got the Penn State sex abuse scandal. We got the NAACP booing Romney and the moron Pelosi saying that he went there to get booed. I mean, I can't believe this. You talk about blaming the victim. This is beyond comprehension. Romney goes to the NAACP and these rude people have the nerve to boo him because he says he wants to balance the budget. And the morons in the media, like, you know, the sycophants of the left-wing fanatics say, oh, he went there to get booed. I was watching a show the other night on one of the history channels, and I saw that the old Thompson submachine gun, you know, the da-da-da-da-da-da, remember that one used in World War II? The Thompson submachine gun? It was called the Chicago typewriter during the era of Al Capone. The Chicago typewriter, the Thompson submachine gun. Well, hasn't come to that level yet under Obama, but it's close. We don't exactly have the Chicago typewriter, but we have a type by keys. You know what I mean? Tip, tip, tip. Hunt and peck method as opposed to a typewriter. Nevertheless, the keys are clicking and the people are dying. And old Godfather Emmanuel can't do anything about it. At least in New York City, they have a stop and frisk law. Yes, they're stopping and frisking gangbangers and taking their guns away. And guess who's screaming about it? The liberals. They're claiming it's racial profiling. If you were a cop walking on the streets of Manhattan and you saw a guy walking around with tattoos on his neck with his pants hanging down underneath his you-know-what, who would you stop and frisk, him or the married with children mother on the Upper East Side? Morons.
Savage.
You can call me at 1-800-449-8255. Any topic is fair game. Let's begin with Eric in Houston, Texas. Go ahead, Eric. You're on the Savage Nation.
Oh, God, why don't you stop talking?
I have no idea what you just said. Start again, what?
Oh, at the NAACP meeting, why would he stop talking when the rabble started booing? You can't let that happen. You can't
Eric, you see, that's a talking point of the fascist left that was invented because Romney actually didn't stop talking. But the fascist left invented the fact that he stopped talking when the booing started. So you're blaming him for the rude people at the NAACP, the uncivil civil rights group boos a man because they don't agree with him? And you're blaming him for being booed?
I know what you're saying, but I'm saying why let...
Get off my show. Take a walk. That is what you're saying because that's what the illegitimate left is saying. You think I don't read? Of course I read. Is everybody on vacation? Does anyone listen to anybody? Is anyone listening to the Savage Nation? 1-800-449-8255. National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in the year 2012. NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, who boo a white man who they don't agree with. That's a great, great piece of public relations for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Unbelievable to me. Unbelievable to me what goes on in this world and what people get away with under the guise of being some kind of protected group. It's beyond comprehension. And yet Pelosi the genius, Pelosi the high IQ Pelosi, the distinguished Nancy Pelosi who never did insider trading, the distinguished Nancy Pelosi who never ever jammed a bill down anyone's throat, says Romney made a calculated move to get booed at the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. At least Romney had the guts to appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. That's more than we could say for Obama. Now, why would Obama not appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? Could anyone explain that one to me? Why would Barack Hussein Obama, the first black president, not appear before the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? I don't understand that. Does anyone have an answer to that? because Romney went there. I mean, he got booed. Guess they don't like him. But he had the nerve to at least not lie to them, not pander to them. He had the nerve to say he's cutting Obamacare when he becomes president. You got to hand it to Romney. At least he's starting to stand up for something. He's starting to show that he's made of something. Again, I'll give out the number, 1-800-449-8255. Las Vegas, Chris, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to say that I understand that you have a huge burden. Every morning you wake up and maybe have to ask yourself, do I have to go to work today? And then deep inside of you, something just draws you forward to plod and pull together all of these things that you bring to us every day, which we're so thankful for. And I want to know, I feel your pain, and not in the Bill Clinton way. I really feel your pain because I have a similar experience every day.
Well, I'm not going to go into crying for myself. Life has been good to me. I mean, when the plane, I didn't know where it would be. I didn't really feel anything. All I thought was, I've had a good life, and I got out a prayer card, and I started to pray. That's all. I felt bad for the thought that my son wouldn't live. I honestly, that's all that went through my mind. But I had no fear, no feelings at all. There are things going on in my life that I choose not to talk about that one day will come out, and you'll be astonished to believe that I've lived through them.
Not surprising, considering the people that you talk about. And
I am the only member of the American media banned in Britain, and nobody in the media gives a rat's behind about what's going on because I am the ultimate outsider. But I bear it. I bear the cross. It's that simple. That's the road I'm on. That's the road God put me on. That's the road God wants me on. That's the pain God wants me to bear.
I think he knew that.
Thank you for the call. Thanks for the call. I'm not here to complain. I'm not here to complain at all. Elon in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. First, I want to say it's an honor to be able to speak to you. And obviously, Romney is listening to you because the guy was nowhere. And now, all of a sudden, he shows up to the NACP and he says exactly what you've been saying.
Well, I don't know. It has to do with me, but everyone's goading him to get out there and say something. Everybody's been saying get out of the edge of the ring and start fighting.
Well, I've been listening to you every day, and I've been screaming for this guy to finally stand up, and I know he didn't hear me, so he must have heard you.
Elon, are you in New York City, per se?
I used to be. I moved to New Jersey, so now I'm a New Jersey resident.
No, the weather was pretty awful. Hot, the humid, I couldn't believe it. The smell of the garbage in the Manhattan, jeez, it was awful. Thanks for the call. No, I couldn't believe it. I get in, you know, I went down to my store, you know, my father's store was on Ludlow Street with a video camera. I actually went and bought a video camera, figuring I'd have some spare time in addition to seeing the doctor, whatever. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the street was teeming with restaurants, bars, but there was the store. Now it's a bar where my father toiled his whole life. It's now some hipster bar. But the funeral parlor is still there. The exact funeral parlor building is still there. The streets are disgusting. They're dirty. They're hideous. I walked down the street with my son, and I said, I got to show you the luncheonette where the famous fly in the tuna story occurred. You know, he's a grown man. You know, I don't know if it meant anything to him where my father, I came back with a tuna sandwich once to the market. I hated that place. I hated the streets. I was afraid of it as a kid. You know, the bums, the criminals. He said to me, you got to learn to be tough. Go out and get me lunch. He would do it every day, and I was afraid to go out, but he made me. So I go out and get the tuna sandwich. I must have been 5 years old. I come back crying because I open it up. There was a fly in the tuna. My father turned red. His neck swelled. The veins started to swell. He grabbed my hand, threw the stand up, ran down the street holding my hand, ran into that little ugly, disgusting luncheonette and said, how dare you give my son a tuna sandwich with a fly in it? So the greasy counter man looks at him and says, let me see the sandwich. He opens it up. He sees the fly in the tuna. He says, so what? I didn't charge you for the fly. Now, you think it's an old joke. It isn't. Unfortunately, it was true. But that luncheonette was still there. It's become a Mexican restaurant now. It's as dirty as it was then. As dirty as it was then. On the corner, there's a deli called Katz's. I could not believe that on the side of this Katz's Delicatessen, the very same inscriptions from like World War II were still up there. Could not believe it. You know, I went in there just as the doors were closing and they wouldn't let us in because they were closed, but there were some nice black guys there and Hispanic guys. I said, look, I grew up. It's okay. I just wanted to show it to... They said, come on in, come on in. I said, are the French fries still as good? I mean, they were closed. These are nice guys. See, I'll tell you something about racial things that you don't understand. A lot of what goes on in this country between races that is good, the vermin in the media don't want you to know. They want you to think that blacks hate whites and whites hate blacks. They want you to think that the races don't get along. That's how they divide and conquer. And believe me, Obama's not too far away from the vermin in the media with regard to dividing the races. I don't see it wherever I go. I don't see it wherever I go. I don't see blacks and whites hating each other. I'm sure it exists. I don't see it, though. I see this generation of black kids, frankly, with almost no racism. Almost none. Almost none. But you wouldn't know that. The media wants you to think that blacks hate you so you could hate them. They live off hatred, as does the Democrat Party. So... that's all. It's my one man's view. Streets were disgusting, dirty, horrible. And there are the hipsters, all the white kids, the white hipsters running around. Everyone smoking a cigarette, all the environmentalists, all the genius global warming experts, all smoking cigarettes, living next to garbage, paying $1 million for an apartment. That's still a slum. I looked at the buildings. I said, they're the same slum that was here when the gangs in New York was in New York. It was like from the gangs in New York era, like 1870. It was like from the era of 1870, 1880, 1890. They're still living in them. But they're like, I don't know what they're paying, but they're so cool. And then there's the girls in the bar at night. They're having a glass of wine. They're alcoholics. The outfits, the dog walking, the cars, the everyone's a star behind their car. Everyone is the star of their own reality show. I never saw anything like it. Every woman, every second... she has cameras following her in her own mind, from the toilet to the closet to the street to the restaurant. There she is. Now I'm getting in a car. Now I'm getting out of a taxi. The way I hail a cab, it should be a reality show. It's time for lunch. It's time for my nails. It's time for yoga. It's time for Prozac. It's time for Mozac. It's time for Chojack. I've never seen anything like it. Everyone's a star behind their car. That's why I want to move to Manhattan. I fit right in. Everyone's walking around with an invisible camera hanging over their head. Used to be halos over people's heads. Now it's invisible cameras following their each and every move.
I'll be right back. Savage.
Let's go to the callers. Chuck Houston, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, Mike, first of all, you have a very keen sense of humor.
I hope so. It's all I got left.
Well, you really, really do. But the reason I'm calling is I was a co-pilot once and I was crashing. And at that moment, I was thinking about really getting the engine started. I don't really remember thinking about the family, but I can understand what the people would be thinking in the back of the plane. And I think the fact that you thought of your family says that your dominant motive is probably love of family. And your peace was found in that moment in Christ. That's what else can you say about it? Because it's a
I don't know. I don't know. I pulled out a prayer card. It wasn't praying to Jesus, by the way. And the thing is, I prayed to God. To me, I don't want to go into who I prayed to. I prayed to God, and all I asked for was peace. I asked for nothing else. And the only thing I felt was a sadness for my son. Nothing else. I didn't fear anything. And I thought that maybe there was something wrong with me, to be honest with you. But thanks, Chuck. I spoke to the pilot afterwards, and he told me that the minute it happened, when the valve failed, he didn't know what happened. All he knows is that the pressurization failed, and the plane started to beep. And he said he went to motor memory, and the motor memory is throttle down, nose down, go down to the altitude that you can breathe without a mask. Because, you see, that's what you're supposed to do as a pilot. You get down to a level where you can figure out what's wrong with the pressurization when you don't need pressure, you know what I'm saying, and oxygen. But meanwhile, he had the mask on. I thought it was like walking into a B-29, you know, like a movie. You know, tower, kind of emergency. Well, I didn't know what that was going on. Get in your seat. Get the mask on, blah, blah, blah. It's not a big deal. All it did was ruin my ability to have another beer. Because at that point, I didn't want to eat or drink the rest of the flight home. All I wanted to do was get back to San Francisco and my dog. So here I am sitting at my desk, my broadcast desk. The world is good. The bay is good. The birds are good. The dog is good. My dog is underneath the broadcast desk like an RCA Victor dog, a little 10-pound poodle. I mean, he must have missed me because I missed him. Manhattan's just amazing. It's an amazing situation. I love dogs, right? So now, don't take this wrong. I'm sorry, there are too many dogs in Manhattan. I've never seen filth like this in my life. Forget the ladies who used the blue bag from the New York Times for what it was made for. You know, the paper's printed primarily for the ladies in Manhattan to use the blue bag to pick up dog droppings. That we understand. They don't even use a newspaper anymore. They use the blue bag. That's become a very big deal. The price of the paper, what they could do with that Sunday paper, that's for like a big dog. I mean, the Sunday New York Times, you know what I'm saying? They could get a pet horse, a small horse with that one. But after dinner, as I'm walking back from a disgusting Persian restaurant that my friend insisted I eat in because it was so great, horrible food, the worst, horrible. It was hot and muggy and the smell of the dog thing, I could never, ever think that a dog could live in that city, you know? Could not. So, I mean, what do you do with this situation? You know, I'm a dog lover. Let's take additional callers. And you're welcome to call me at 1-800-449. You can call about the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People booing Mitt Romney. You can call about the Thompson submachine, once called the Chicago typewriter, and what's going on in Chicago now, not too far from that one. And I'll take your calls on this and other topics. Let us begin with, I don't know, Houston, Texas again. I'm big in Texas. Maybe I should move to Texas. I love Texas. The weather's worse than Florida. I'd be there in a minute. I can't take the humidity and heat, but the people are the best in America in many ways, in Houston, in Texas, rather. I mean, everyone I talk to says it's a world unto itself. It's the antithesis to the stupidity of the Upper East Side and the idiocy of San Francisco. So let's go to Texas. Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I love your old-time stories growing up in New York. And, of course, I don't know the city, but I was always wondering, do you have any stories about the mafia guys coming in there to try to shake down your old man?
It's a good story, but the truth is he did know someone who was allegedly someone in that world who didn't come in to shake him down, but he came in to play pinochle.
Oh, okay, because I know you remember that scene in The Sopranos when they walk into Starbucks and try to shake it down.
No, I got to tell this story. It's a good one. And by the way, it's funny that you ask it, because Train Tracks, which will be out in November, my storybook right after the election, which I know is going to be a big hit because people are going to be dying to forget the election, does not have this story in it. So I can tell it to you now on the show. It's a true story. So my father has this little store with other, you know, each one has a booth and they sell used goods, antiques, whatever. There's a guy who comes around in an unmarked, like a junky two-door old Plymouth to collect rents in the tenements on that very street, because he owned a lot of the buildings down there at the time, him and his friends did, and they would collect rents. He'd come around and collect. If they didn't pay, he gave him a beating, whatever. And he was a really rough-looking guy, comes in. But he came in the store not to shake anyone down. He came in to get away from the mean streets and play pinochle with my my uncle. And here's the funny part. I mean, we all knew who he was. We knew he was one of these people. You know, you're told and they whisper, oh, he's that guy, Jackie, you know, watch out. So you have a respect for the guy because you're afraid of him, right? Even as a kid, but you're looking at him, you figure he's packing heat, he's this, he's that. But he was a rough guy, you could see, built like a little bear. So it never bothered anybody. So he'd come in to play cards with my uncle, who had the booth in the front. And they would play cards, I think, rummy or pinochle. I don't know what they're playing. And my uncle was a great guy. He didn't care who the guy was. So he would curse him while they're playing. And this gangster would laugh. He would scream. Let's say the gangster had a better hand than his. He'd throw the hands down. He'd say, you son of a, you know what. And the gangster, who would take no disrespect from anybody, would break into laughter. Why? Because he came in there and let his hair down. He didn't have to walk around with his shell of ego in that place. He could be a regular guy and let the guy he's playing cards with curse him. You follow me? That's part of the story. There's more to it than meets the eye. There's nothing to do with money in that store. There was a scene with a friend's mother. I can't mention it because he was a distant friend, and the mother was, she thought she was very attractive with the Cadillac, you know, from Jamaica States. Apparently, she used to come in there slumming to look for, you know, jewelry, this and that. One day, their eyes clicked, and I think something more clicked after the eyes clicked, we heard. But I lost track of the kid, you know. He had a dynamic male energy, and let's say she had a dynamic female energy, and the rest is not history. 1-800-449-MichaelSavage.com. Sacramento, California. Blair, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Good to talk to you again, Dr. Savage. Right now I'm actually in San Francisco.
Oh,
I got to get
God,
out of the sweltering heat in Lafayette. Are you drawn
to yeah. Wait, hold it. Is that not the best weather in the world with that fog and the air and the wind?
I'm looking at Alcatraz right now and a tanker going by. It's beautiful.
You're looking at Alcatraz and you're tanked up right now?
No, I'm looking at a tanker. I'm at North Point Tower and I can see the Golden Gate.
Oh, I thought you were tanked up.
My point is I'd like you to maybe draw a comparison between the mismanagement of Manhattan and the homelessness. I just was at Burgermeister and walking around North Beach and getting my focaccia bread, and I cannot believe all the homeless people that I've seen. That obviously,
the bums in San Francisco. There are more bums in San Francisco than garbage bags, but in New York there are more garbage bags than bums, because apparently the bums in New York all have so much welfare they don't even walk around in the streets anymore. They don't have to beg. The Obama administration just takes care of them.
Savage.